Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Deborah Becker. The city of Boston is growing much faster than expected. The latest estimates have the city's population jumping to 760,000 people by the year 2030, and that's 50,000 more people than previous estimates. So, Boston Mayor Marty Walsh is outlining a new plan to increase housing. His goal is to develop 69,000 housing units by the year 2030, and that amends his original housing plan by adding some 16,000 additional units. The mayor's plan comes the same day that new figures were released showing that the median price of a single-family home in Greater Boston is now at $625,000. So, how do those ever-increasing prices affect the market and housing policies, and what do you make of this growth? Joining us to talk about this is Tim Reardon. He's Director of Data Services for the Metropolitan Area Planning Council, which worked with Boston to develop this new housing plan. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us, Deb.
Also on the line is the Chief of Housing and Director of Neighborhood Development for the City of Boston, Sheila Dillon. Hello, Sheila. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Glad to be here.
So I want to start with this prediction of 760,000 people by 2030. We have a bit of tape here from Brian Golden, who's director of the Boston Planning and Development Agency. He spoke at a roundtable meeting with reporters at the mayor's office yesterday. Let's listen.
From 1980 to 2010, we grew modestly, about 1,500 people net gain per year, adding about 50,000 over 30 years. And then in the past 6 years, we've added another 50,000. So 50,000 over 30 years, followed by 50,000 over 6 years.
Whew, so that's a big jump, 50,000 over 30 as opposed to 50,000 over 6. Tim, you dug into these numbers. So what happened here? Why did Boston suddenly get so popular?
Well, you know, it's a situation, it's a confluence of a number of factors. I mean, a lot of it has to do with the incredible strength of the Metro Boston economy and all the jobs that are being added in Boston, in Cambridge, Somerville, a number of other surrounding communities that are attracting young workers to come fill those jobs. And it's also compounded by an increasing preference for young householders to live in the city and to live in urban areas and to avoid living in far-flung suburban locations where they don't have all the amenities and convenience of living in the city.
So it's primarily young folks who want to live in the city and possibly not drive. We're not talking about driving typically. I mean, do we know a little bit more about these folks?
Yeah, that's right. A lot of that population growth is driven by changes in migration patterns among younger residents. And really, a lot of it is also, you know, folks who traditionally would have moved out of Boston when they hit their 30s and started having kids or moved out of urban areas who are sticking around and driving that increased population growth, as well as increased international immigration, which is also affecting it as well.
So, Sheila, I'm just wondering, where do you think most of these new units might go, according to Marty Walsh's new plan?
Sure. So the BPDA, our planning agency, has done a fabulous job over the last 4 years doing a lot of neighborhood planning and an overall city plan. And they really have identified areas that they think are ripe for growth. They're by good transit. They're light industrial areas that are now obsolete. And most neighborhoods are feeling pretty good about, if you put the housing there, we will support it. So areas in South Boston, Suffolk Downs, there's parts of Dorchester that we feel could have a lot more capacity. So we do want to be much more intentional about the growth, and we think that's going to, you know, get us more support to grow the housing stock.
Now, we do know that in some neighborhoods, residents have expressed concerns about traffic, about transportation, about prices, right? There's all of those things. So Sheila, what would happen in terms of city planning? And Tim, I want you to weigh in on this, too. What would happen in terms of city planning to address some of those concerns on the part of residents?
Sure. So the traffic is a concern, and I think people are feeling that the traffic is up. But traffic's up in part because so many people are commuting into Boston because there's so many jobs. So it doesn't just because we're building more housing in Boston doesn't necessarily it's going to make the traffic worse. In fact, it might make the traffic better. We are very, very intentional, though. The vast majority of the new housing and the new housing that is planned is within a half-mile walk to a major transit stop. So we always want to encourage developers and new residents to take public transportation and not have as many cars. And the BPDA is allowing many developments not to have a one-for-one parking space anymore because people are giving up their cars when they move into the city.
And what about affordable? Let's talk about affordable. So this plan includes about 15,000 affordable housing units, I'm told. So tell me, what is affordable in this market where we find out today that the average home price in Greater Boston is $625,000, and what's middle income?
Sure. So first and foremost, we need to build housing for a range of incomes. And that is serving our lowest income folks that are making, $15,000, $16,000 a year, up through our middle class. And so we have put forth a goal. We want to build almost 16,000 new units of affordable housing. That would bring our overall city number to 70,000 units of deed-restricted income. But you do get a question a lot, what's affordable? What's affordable? It's affordable at a range of incomes. And, we need to serve the poorest folks that are here, but we also need to make sure that our middle-class folks that are, working two jobs and they also need a good rent that they can afford and or a home to raise their children. So it's very, very intentional about we want to see a range of incomes. We also want the market to build housing for the middle class. So while we're trying to fund and put out land and do everything we can to increase the affordable housing stock, we really need the market, our developers, to build in less pricey neighborhoods where land is cheaper and build more modest, housing units. So it's a combination of those two things that I think are going to, serve Boston well.
And middle income, what would be the cutoff?
So most of what is deed restricted and called middle income, it's, $50,000, $60,000 for a household. When we say it's affordable, the market is creating a product that is more affordable to a middle-income household, we say, anywhere up to $125,000. That's two adults working and making $60,000 a piece. Mm-hmm. So that's sort of generally how we think about it.
Mm-hmm. And then what will this cost the city?
So to build this affordable housing, we need to spend $50 million a year. But I should say that that's only 19% of the development costs. The rest need to come from our state partners and the federal government. And the state has been fabulous. They are funding they have money in almost all of our affordable housing projects. The federal government over the last 10 years has really cut back on the amount of money they're putting up for affordable housing. So we need to continue to lobby them for additional resources.
Tim, I wonder if you could weigh in here a bit in terms of planning and how to plan for housing developments, large numbers of housing units, to try to mitigate some of the negative consequences that residents are concerned about, like traffic and the lack of affordable housing.
Right. So sure, traffic is certainly one. And it's essential as we build and design those and permit those new housing developments that they're done in a way that allow people choices for how they get around and minimize the impacts. So that can be done by reducing the amount of parking that's available on site to discourage residents from owning cars and building it in such a way that encourages them to use alternative modes of transportation. And it also has to go back to improving our transportation system so that that's a reliable, safe and convenient option for people to get around. But Sheila's right. A lot of the traffic and transportation challenges that folks are seeing on the roadways are not due to new housing construction, but due to increased commuting, because people are commuting in because they can't afford a house in the city or in the inner core. And also things like the rise of ride hailing and that are adding more cars to the road. Right. So the more that we can provide better alternatives for people to avoid that, the more they'll be able to find housing choices that work for them.
Are there other communities that have done something like this? $50 million a year sounds like a lot. Sounds like a significant investment on the part of a community to deal with affordable housing. Is this modeled after anything that you're aware of?
Other major cities in the country that are seeing increased population are trying to grow their own resources to build more affordable housing. But certainly Boston is putting more money in than any other city or town in Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. We are excited that MAPC Mayor Walsh and Mayor Curatone are co-chairing a group looking at regional production. I think there's an announcement that's going to be made in the next couple of weeks. So we do need other cities and towns outside of Boston to build, but to build also more affordable housing.
Tim, what would your thoughts be about that?
The public investment is tremendously important. We certainly need more, and I agree that Mayor Walsh and his administration and the state have put in a lot of money. There's also opportunities to look more to the private sector to find other ways to have them fund more of the affordable housing through the inclusionary development policy, through the preservation of existing affordable units. And there's a number of those strategies that have been used successfully in other cities around the country and that are reflected in this housing plan that the city released yesterday.
I wonder, and I'd like to ask both of you, how do you figure in a recession in all of this? Because eventually you would think that housing prices are going to have to at least stop, plateau at some mm-hmm. point. And also, we have this issue that we heard about in a study by the Institute for Policy Studies recently, and that was that many of the high-end properties in Boston are actually not lived in. They're investments. And so what does that do to housing and the whole market and planning for something like that? How do you address that? Tim, you first.
Sure. So I'll take the Policy Studies Institute report. I mean, I think that identified a challenge in which housing stock is not used to live. There's certain segments of the housing stock that are not used for living, but as investment vehicles. And that's unfortunate because those are units that could be, that could be lived in or that we hope are contributing to solving the supply crisis, but are not doing so. That study did examine a very small slice of production over the last 20 years. So less than 3% of all the units fell into that category. And the majority of what's being produced is actually being occupied. But we do need to, there are tools to manage the prevalence of units that are either used for investment or for short-term rentals. The city has adopted an ordinance on that. The state adopted legislation to help manage that. And those are important steps to help bring those units back into the rental market or back into the for sale market. Because it's essential that it would actually be a good thing if our vacancy rates for units that are for sale or for rent actually went up a little bit, because it would mean that renters have a little more choice, buyers have a little more choice, and landlords and sellers have a little less power over the market so that things would become a little more affordable.
Mm-hmm. Sheila, your thoughts about that, especially in terms of preparing for another, at least a plateau in real estate prices?
Sure. So I agree. I'm thrilled that I just want to chime in here. We are thrilled that we did pass short-term rental regulations a couple months ago, because every unit that is built should be occupied by a resident of Boston. We feel very strongly about that. You know, the numbers, the production numbers, and I'm not a demographer, but the production numbers that we put forth yesterday factor in not a straight line of growth and economic growth and population growth. It does take into consideration some recessions and some years where there won't be as robust growth. So those projections are in there. Right now, we get a lot of our resources for affordable housing production from the market, from the private market. So in some ways, a heated market puts a lot more pressure on rents and sales prices. The flip side of that is when the market is very strong, we're extracting millions more of more dollars so we can invest in affordable housing and the preservation of the public housing that we have. So while I would probably welcome not a recession by any means, but rents and sales prices increases becoming more moderate, it will mean that we will have less money to invest in affordable housing. So it's the downside to any kind of downturn in the market.
Okay, Sheila Dillon, Chief of Housing and Director of Neighborhood Development for the City of Boston. Thanks so much for being with us.
Our pleasure.
Also, Tim Reardon, Director of Data Services for the Metropolitan Area Planning Council. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Deb.
Stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Deborah Becker, and this is Radio Boston.